Hello and welcome to WNHH's Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. New Haven Healthy Start keeps New Haven ticking and alive. I mean, what could be more important in our community than making sure that babies are born alive and healthy? Healthy Start has been doing that for 20 years, and they're about to celebrate their 20th anniversary in New Haven. And not only is it its anniversary, September is also National Infant Mortality Awareness Month. Ken Harris is the director of New Haven Healthy Start. He's here in the WNHH-FM studio to update us on the mission. And we're also going to speak by phone, and we're going to ask you to bear with us a little bit as we try to make it work quite right. We've got two people going to be speaking at an event this week in New Haven, two national figures at a 10th anniversary event for Healthy Start. And they are Deborah Frazier, CEO of the National Healthy Start Foundation, and Arthur James, MD, who's the executive director of the Kerwin Institute for the Study of Race and Ethnicity, and the associate clinical professor, Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Ohio State University's Wexner Medical Center. A lot of titles there, and I'm sure a lot of work he's up to. And we want to give a special thanks to Yale New Haven Hospital for providing support for today's program. Ken Harris, welcome to the studio. Nice to see you on this Tuesday morning that feels like a Monday.
Thanks a lot, Paul. Good to be here.
So you got a big event coming up this week. What's going on and where?
Yes, we're really excited. As you mentioned earlier, it's our 20th year celebration. And so on this week, on Thursday, we're hosting our 20th anniversary convening. The foundation's happy to host this event at the Omni Hotel. And the event will run from 8:30 to 3 p.m. And our theme is Then, Now, and Beyond. So really celebrating the 20 years that we've been here in New Haven.
And I'm sure there's a lot of challenges we're going to be talking about. And so what's the day going to feature? That's a long day. What happens a day long at the Omni from 8:30 to 3 p.m.?
Well, I think some great things. And so we're really trying to provide that framework of then, now, and beyond. So then you have speakers that were really some of our local partners, primarily from our healthcare centers, our hospital. Those representatives will be talking about the work that we've been doing over the 20 years and kind of what were things like then. And then also we will move into kind of what people are doing now to really save babies and engaging women, getting them into care and ensuring that babies are born healthy. Also, we've been doing some great work around fatherhood, and the foundation has led the fatherhood work for over 20 years. And so we'll highlight some of that work. And then at the end of the day, really kind of being hopeful and talking about beyond. So hopefully engaging in conversations that kind of lead people to think about the future, and even in this challenging times, having hope as we move beyond where we've been. So it should be an exciting day, and Dr. Arthur James is going to kick it off, really providing us this national perspective on infant mortality and really the legacy of racism and how that has impacted the disparities over the years.
And how are we doing in New Haven?
New Haven, we're doing better than we were. So certainly since the 1980s, when infant mortality was not only bad here in New Haven, but it was bad in the nation. And so our nation really responded to that crisis we started with the Commission on Infant Child Health in 1985, addressing issues related to access, prenatal care. And then also we've had advances in medical world, as well as, with regards to people understanding the issue. And so a lot of people responded. So not only a medical response, but really as a community. And so you really saw social services really responding to wrap themselves around these women and these families. And so today our infant mortality is much less than it was when we started. So in the 80s, you had infant mortality in some of our neighborhoods as high as 25 or more babies dying per 1,000 live births.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really
And incredible. By dying, we're talking about before they're delivered or also in the first month or so?
Right up until we measure infant mortality the first year of life. So anywhere early on to up to a first year of birth.
25 out of 1,000.
Yeah, and some of them.
And I was around when that was being, I remember the commission, and then there was the whole task force in the 86 convened at the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still, I believe, is the umbrella for Healthy Start program, correct?
Absolutely, yes.
And 25. I remember that the rates were comparable to third world nations.
Exactly. We were doing worse than some third world nations. And so in our country, we've ranked anywhere from 30th in the world to, I think right now we're 26th when it comes to infant mortality.
Still. So like what would be higher than us that would surprise people?
You mean in our country? Well, we have 100 programs around the country. And so we
No, I mean like Cuba, I assume has
Sri
a lower
Lanka, infant mortality. Yeah, Sri
they
Lanka,
do better than we
Cuba.
Do.
They're doing better than we are.
So why do so many babies die, Ken Harris?
Well, Well, I think there are a lot of reasons for that. You know, women not being in care early could contribute to that. But with the Healthy Start programs, we target the black infant mortality. It's really looking at that disparity in black babies versus white babies. And some of those issues are beyond medical, have included things like, you know, looking at environment. So place matters, where people are. Poverty certainly has impacted how people access services and certainly could lead to a poor birth outcome. Education. And so a lot of our programs are not only stemmed around medical interventions, but looking at some of the social aspects. So looking at the social determinants of health. We also have a life course perspective. So not only waiting till a woman is pregnant, but really looking at her life across since being a little girl. So how are we taking care of our young girls? And so it's a life course approach that we have. So there are lots of different things that can contribute. And we've learned lots over the 25 years of health.
So in the mid 80s, it was as high as 25 deaths per 1,000 births in New Haven. What was it citywide at the time? Was it 6 point something or 8 point something?
No, and the city was high, it was not that low. I don't want to misquote, but it was not that low. So it's still pretty high.
And what is it now?
Right now in the city, we have our infant mortality is at 11.4.
Oh, so that's still pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
And nationally?
Nationally, we're at 6.
6. So that 11 deaths per 1,000 live births would still rank not that great compared to some third world nations, correct?
Correct.
Wow. And so, but you say we came down considerably since the 80s.
We have. And let me point out, though, with Healthy Start, one of the reasons we're celebrating, Paul, is that the Healthy Start babies do better than non-Healthy Start babies. And so the Healthy Start program infant mortality rate is at 4.5.
Oh, okay. And what's a Healthy Start baby? Someone a parent you've identified early on in the process and working with?
Yeah, it's a woman who's been engaged with Healthy Start through one of our care coordinators who's housed either at a health center, one of the hospitals, or even out in the community where these women are able to enroll in Healthy Start and they have a care coordinator that's really attached to them throughout that pregnancy. And then even beyond that, so helping them around other social services and getting other care that they may need, transportation, childcare, et cetera. So these women are kind of in our care for this entire time. And so we find that they tend to do better than non-Healthy Start.
So does Healthy Start pay for that position, let's say at Hill Health Center, I'm assuming Fairhaven Health Center?
Absolutely. So the foundation provides grants to the hospital, which houses two of our workers there. We also provide funds and grant to the both health centers, which hires a care coordinator. And then we also, with our male involvement program, focus on fatherhood. And so we have two agencies that receive grants to hire male coordinators.
Is one of them the New Haven Family Alliance?
New Haven Family Alliance.
And who would be?
Christian Action Agency. Community Action Agency.
I'm
Emma Smith.
And so before we get to the male side of the picture, if you don't mind walking me through what will happen with a woman who's identified by a Healthy Start coordinator at Neil New Haven or Fairhaven Health Center, Hill Health, how does that work?
Okay. So, we have outreach. The care coordinators are housed at the hospital or health center. So when a woman enters the health center, she will be introduced to our care coordinator. And those workers are placed in the institution and they're integrated into the care. And so at every institution, the hospital and health center, we assure that that woman makes it to the Healthy Start care coordinator. And so at that point, she'll be invited to enroll into Healthy Start. So the care coordinator will enroll her in and sign her up and give her other benefits, a whole packet of information, and then also proceed, once she's signed up for the program, proceed to engage with all the other services at the institution. So each time she comes into the hospital or health center, she'll have an opportunity to stop and see her care coordinator. And again, to check in and see if there are any other needs that she may have outside of the medical. So once she saw the doctor or nurse, she also will be able to see the care coordinator. And that care coordinator will stay in touch with her. If she misses an appointment down the road, the care coordinator will reach out to her. And if need be, we also have an outreach component. So we have two outreach workers that are hired through the health department. So we provide a grant to the health department as well. But that care coordinator can partner with that outreach worker to call and have the outreach worker go out and do a home visit to just re-engage that woman. So again, we have these workers within the institutions and the ones that are at the outreach at the health department kind of work together to keep her engaged, because that's one of the issues, that women don't stay engaged.
And we're talking about infant mortality, and one of New Haven's prized institutions, New Haven Healthy Start, which is celebrating its 20th anniversary of keeping babies healthy and alive in New Haven. They have an event coming this Thursday from 8:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Omni. They're going to have national speakers, two of whom we're still hoping are going to call in. I don't know, Ritasha, if we've heard from them, or we're hoping to hear from Deborah Frazier, who's going to be speaking at that, as well as Dr. Arthur James. We're speaking with Ken Harris, who runs Healthy Start in New Haven. Ken Harris, how long have you been involved with Healthy Start?
Well, with Healthy Start in general, Healthy Start, the federal Healthy Start program started in 1991. So I was still in Boston then. So I was part of the Healthy Start program there in Boston. And I came here to be the director when New Haven got funded in 1997. So I'm totally 25 years and in New Haven, 20 years.
So you're a lifer at this point, huh?
Absolutely.
And what has changed over that time in terms of how we deal with infant mortality?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think when we started with infant mortality, looking at it, Healthy Start had 15 programs nationally. Today, we have 100 programs, and so that's one of the big changes. I think the work that happened in the early years had good promise, and so there were lessons learned from that first five, six years of Healthy Start, and these replication sites began to pop up around the country. We knew that we had not only urban problem, but there were rural areas in this country that had high infant mortality, as well as in our tribal community, as well as our border states. And so Healthy Start is going to be pretty diverse, and although in New Haven and many other places we're focused on the black infant mortality, we look at infant mortality overall, because in this country, none of our babies should be dying at the rate that they are. So I think there's more awareness. Healthy Start is a community-engaged initiative, and so the model requires that community be involved. And so we're right in the neighborhoods. We have women impacted by the problem, part of our decision-making tables, community, civic leaders, pastors, faith community, so as well as the providers, as well as clinicians that really help lead this work. So I think that has impacted the way that we've been able to improve infant mortality.
Because now, someone listening to this show, let's say they just got pregnant or they might get pregnant soon, what should they know basically about some of the biggest steps they could take so they have a healthy baby? Like, is smoking important? Is drug use important? Is stress? Is physical labor? What should they know?
Yeah, all of that. And I think the most important thing to know
alcohol.
Is
alcohol.
Yeah, so to get connected. And we really emphasize just get connected to your provider. And when you're connected, that's where you begin to get some of that education around those issues. And recognizing that, for example, smoking, if someone has a habit of smoking, we understand that. And so there are programs that are evidence-based programs that we implement to help women really quit smoking. And it's not just an expectation to drop it, but we understand some of the issues associated with living in, you know, stressful situations. And so we have programs that address stress and toxic stress. So the education is a big piece, and we find it when women...
That's a tough one too, right? Because if you quit smoking, but you're in the house with other people smoking, isn't that almost worse what you breathe in than what you...
Absolutely. And so we do the education around secondhand smoke and also, Paul, thirdhand smoke. So we're talking now about even when people within your home go outside to smoke, it's in their clothing. And so, again, coming back in to hold the baby could also cause harm. So, again, it's that huge education piece.
That's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Wow. How about alcohol? How big a deal is that?
Alcohol is a big deal. We have fetal alcohol syndrome. It's called FASD. So that's certainly an issue. And so one of the things that happens when a woman is enrolled, Paul, is there's a full comprehensive assessment that's done with the woman that kind of goes over some of these questions. And so when those kinds of things, smoking, drinking, drug use are addressed, we're able to support the woman around that. But that's part of that first assessment.
Great. And we have a caller on the line. Is this Mrs. Frazier or Mr. Dr. James? Hello, you're on Dateline New Haven at WNHH Radio. We're not hearing. Okay, apologize for that. We're talking about a Healthy Start and 20 years of keeping babies alive in New Haven. We're going to be celebrating that with an event at the Omni Hotel this week. And we were expecting to hear from two of the national speakers who are coming to address this gathering, Deborah Frazier and Dr. Arthur James. And I am told we have somebody on the phone, but are you there, whoever was called in? Okay, Ritasha.
Yeah. Okay, Paul, if you like, you want me to introduce Deborah?
Yeah.
So in addition to being the director here in New Haven, I'm also the president of the National Healthy Start Association in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? You're head of the national group?
Yes, and so Deborah's our CEO of the National Healthy Start Association. And Deborah has been associated with Healthy Start way back in the beginning. So not only was she there in 1991, but she served in several capacities before becoming our CEO. She's worked with the federal government. She sat on the Secretary Advisory's Commission on Infant Mortality, which is the group that really helped create Healthy Start in 1991. So Deborah's been around, and she's worked with several projects down in the southern area as well, Louisiana, Arkansas. And so we're happy to have her as our CEO, and she's been at the helm for quite a few years. And the National Healthy Start Association is the agency that really focuses on advocacy. So had it not been for the association being established in 1998, we probably wouldn't have Healthy Start today.
And so you're on the board. So do you travel a lot for this, Ken?
I do, but our office is in Washington, D.C. And so when there are national or regional meetings, I usually attend some of those meetings with our maternal child health partners.
And when you look at what we're doing in New Haven, what do you see compared to other cities, how we're addressing the problem? Have we picked up some good ideas you can think of? Have you picked up, have you helped other places? How are we ranked there?
Yeah, I was going to say, not only have we picked up, because we really stay engaged with the leading maternal child health experts in the nation, but we've also been able to share a lot based on what we've done here in New Haven. New Haven is unique with regards to community engagement. So having the hospitals, the health centers, our community agency, the type of engagement that we've built through our Healthy Start Consortium CAN has been really strong. And so we've actually gone to provide technical assistance even around community engagement and creating your community groups to work with your Healthy Starts.
And what would be the best idea you've picked up from some other community that we brought home?
Some of the best ideas to become more innovative in our community academic research. And so it's led to some great projects. So I think that's the biggest.
What would be an example of a project?
We have Natasha Ray, who's one of our Healthy Start staff.
She's been there from the beginning, right?
Natasha's been there from the beginning. Yes.
Matter of fact, I met her when she was at a Christian Community Action Project called Mothers for Justice.
And when she was the president.
Back in the 90s, I remember how she impressed me that she had been a single mom, I guess, when she learned how to advocate with state officials. And then she became someone who ran a program to help other women, which I always found very, and she's still going at it.
And that's when I met her as well, Paul, when she was the president of the Mothers for Justice. And so we actually asked her to come, and she was our first co-chair of our community consortium. So yes, Natasha's been there since the beginning, and she was there as a volunteer prior to being hired. And so she's been on staff for 15 years now. But
so that's a success story.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so she and Dr. Karen Wang did a project where it looked at community academic partnerships. And so that led to a publication, and they were presented at several national conferences.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was a great example, and that work continues to grow. Yeah, so Natasha's been awesome, and again, one of our leaders nationally as well.
So now I believe we do have Deborah Frazier now on the line. Ms. Frazier, are you there? Still can't hear. She on the other line, Harry. Sorry about that, folks. It's our technical difficulties here. But you did pick up a phone call from Deborah Frazier, and people are going to be able to hear her in person at the Omni Hotel at the Thursday conference. Harry Joseph is our station manager, trying to make sure everything is plugged in.
I got to hear from her.
Got to hear from her. Hold on. Okay, hold on, says our station manager. Should we play a quick song, Harry, while we get this set up, or what do you think? Okay, so... Now, Ken, tell me why you got involved in this work. What's your background?
Well, I got involved for personal reasons. So while living in Boston, Massachusetts, I lived in a neighborhood actually that had high infant mortality, one of the highest infant mortality.
What neighborhood was that?
Mattapan, Mass. And a city that really reminds me a lot of like the cities here in New Haven, like Dixwell, other neighborhoods that have other challenges. So I lived there, and infant mortality was pretty high, and I was really involved a lot with community at the time. But it's personal for me because I also had a baby born, my wife and I. Our son was a low birth weight baby, and we also lost our second child.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And so infant mortality.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, it stuck out for me being an African-American male and just understanding more. So I got involved. I heard about Healthy Start, and I went to the table to kind of find out what was going on.
And so why do you think, if you don't mind my asking, you were pretty conscious, right? You were someone who's probably being very careful not to lose a baby. Obviously, mm-hmm. It can happen to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Did you pick up anything about why that happened to you? Or?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. But I did learn, as you just said, Paul, that it doesn't matter where you are socioeconomically. We have lots of study. There's some great work Unnatural Causes, which is a documentary done on PBS. But it really showed an example of an African-American woman, college-educated, and she experienced an infant loss as well. So social economics had nothing to do with it. And so I still don't have answers to why that happened to me. But that's why this work is still so important to do. Because I think the more we know, the better we can do. We do see improvements in all that we've been doing. So I think getting engaged, educated, taking care of yourself as early as possible is the biggest message.
And Ms. Frazier, are you there yet? You're probably hearing me and I'm not able to hear you. Deborah Frazier, are you there? And all right, I guess we're not able to make that work. You know, I remember from when we had kids, the most nervous thing in the world is when you have a kid and you, all of a sudden you have your first kid and there's this life you're responsible for, this awesome responsibility. And everything from how many pounds the kid weighs to how you, and I remember we had this great pediatrician, Morris Wessel's not alive anymore, and Dr. Rob LaCamera, and they used to know that often it was the parent who needed more reassuring than the kid. So they used to give Benadryl all the time because Benadryl wasn't going to hurt the baby, help him sleep, and make the parent feel like you were giving them something, which was very, very funny.
Everyone knows about Benadryl. But just since you mentioned Morris Wessel, just to let you know, so when we started our first community consortium, Morris Wessel was part of that group, and he was there for all of these community meetings. And so I got to know him early on, and he was really a great asset to this community.
He was so intuitive.
Yeah, he was awesome to have around. So.
And he was a much beloved and well-known well-known pediatrician. We're going to try one more time. Deborah Frazier, you're there on the other line. I'm really sorry we couldn't get the couldn't get it to work. Harry, no luck. Everything, all the Dobbs look right. All right, so Ken Harris here, who runs Healthy Start. You are the main event here
on
WNHH Radio's Dateline New Haven, WNHH 103.5 FM live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. We're talking about infant mortality, and I apologize that we were not able to have Deborah Frazier and Arthur James, but that's more reason why everybody who cares about keeping babies alive in our community should show up at the Omni Hotel this Thursday from 8:30 a.m. to 3 p.m., for a day-long conference celebrating 20 years of New Haven Healthy Start and looking ahead where we're going next. And we're going to have those national speakers, Deborah Frazier, the CEO of the National Heart Healthy Start Association. Arthur James is the executive director of Kerwin Institute, a specialty in study of race and ethnicity. Now, why is that, Ken Harris, that we have these ethnic disparities and racial disparities? Why do black and brown children babies die more often?
I think Dr. James's presentation is going to speak volumes to that, and I certainly couldn't do it justice. But again, I think one of the reasons we asked him to come is because he has a great research that he's done around the historical racism and how it led to and created disparities. And so you think about a race and everyone starting at the same time, it's one thing. But then think about a race where one of the runners didn't get to the line in time. And so when we think about the history of black people in this country, and I think the way they have accessed health care or been denied access, I should say, I think that whole historical journey tells a story. So when you've been excluded for such a long time, and then all of a sudden you're included, it still takes the time to catch up. And I think his presentation will, you know, answer that question. Can black babies really catch up? So I think it's going to be a wonderful, intriguing conversation. But he also, as a medical doctor, talks also about the advances even medically and how that's been great to, you know, keeping babies alive longer. But again, speaking to the disparities, he calls for a need for a community to come together and intervene and connect with medicine. So it's, it should be a fascinating conversation to kind of pull it all together, I think.
All right. Now, I'm sure he'll be talking about institutional racism, right? Like, in terms of access to healthcare in the first place, or higher rates of unhealthy behavior tied to poverty, or am I wrong about that?
No, you're absolutely right.
When you're looking at racial disparities, do they correspond with poverty, or is it like racism in the mortgage lending business where it cuts across income within race?
You've said it. It deals with that historical aspects of racism, what cuts across. And I think as a framework in our work with Healthy Start, we use Dr. Kamara Jones's framework, and really looking at institutional racism, personally mediated and internalized racism. And so she proposes if we address the structural institutional racism, we'll begin to mitigate the others. And so I think the work for us has really been focused on some of those institutional on challenges around racism.
Can you tell me a story about a mom you dealt with who life was changed and the baby's life was changed by Healthy Start?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And when people ask me that question, I always go back to a mom from Boston. And this mom has been repeated many times here since I've been in New Haven. But there's one mom that I met many, many years ago. And I met her at one of our community meetings. And someone had encouraged her to come out because there are these people here that are really focused on taking care of women and children and families, which is the same message we have here in New Haven. But she came to that meeting and she was really broken. She was about 80 pounds and she shared her story of having an addiction in her life that caused her to lose her 6 children and the last being a small child. She came to the meeting pretty broken.
Custody?
Custody. She lost custody of her kids through the Department of Children and Families. And DSS, as we call it in Boston, Department of Social Services. So they had taken her children, and she didn't know what to do. She was pretty at a low point. But she got involved. We connected her with some of our Healthy Start workers. And again, these women wrapped themselves around her, got her into care, into treatment, educated. Eventually, she went back to school, and we had one of our physicians who was part of our community group kind of adopted her, took her under her wings, and so she ended up getting her associate's degree. You know, so fast forward, this woman's life changed and turned around. She started gaining weight, the whole nine, and eventually, after about 2 years of working with her, she got all of her children back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so she went on to get an advanced degree as well. So she's working in the hospital even to this day, so I keep in touch with Natalie. Yes.
Wow, that's wonderful.
And so I think that's the kind of story in New Haven as well. We have many moms that come in and we meet them where they are. They get supported and strengthened and then they actually become involved. So they come to the community meeting to help other women. So that's kind of the Healthy Start story all around, I think.
And we're trying to stay in touch with Deborah Fraser, who's coming to New Haven on Thursday to give a speech for Healthy Start. Mm-hmm. My station manager, Harry Joe, says we should try one more time. Mrs. Fraser, are you there? Can we hear you?
Yes, I am here.
Oh, yes, it's a miracle. You see, nothing's impossible, right? We could even get you on the radio here at Dateline New Haven. Thank you so much for being patient, staying on the phone while we worked out the technical difficulty. Great to hear your voice.
Well, I'm pleased to be here with you.
Okay, now you're the...
phone today and in person later this week.
All right, that's a deal. Now, Deborah Fraser, you are the CEO of the National Healthy Start Association. Ken Harris has been telling us about it. He runs the board. What is the message you are bringing to New Haven on Thursday when we talk about infant mortality?
I think the message that we're bringing is that the National Healthy Start program, the initiative itself, is an important initiative for this country, and that each of our 100 Healthy Starts is important in its own right at the local level. The national program is important because it is the signature community-based program that the federal government uses to address infant mortality in this country. Infant mortality is being reduced. The rate is being reduced. The number of babies is decreasing somewhat. But low birth weight is not being reduced. And as Ken may have indicated earlier, the gap in infant mortality rate is still significant.
Do you mean by gap, do you mean the racial gap?
The gap between the white and black infant mortality rate is still there. So the most significant decrease has been in the white infant mortality rate. So at the local level, the 100 Healthy Starts that we have in this country serve communities that have, at a minimum, an infant mortality rate that is at least 1.5 times the national rate, or 1.5 times the rate of the surrounding community. And I say 1.5 times because more often than not, it's higher than that.
Mm-hmm. So what is the national rate, Ms. Fraser?
The national rate right now is about 5.
So if they have 7.5 or more, you guys sweep in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we swoop in, but they have to submit an application that shows that they have a plan.
You swoop in when they apply. And let me ask you about those numbers. Like, what are the important statistics about the depth of the problem of low birth weight babies and racial disparities in infant mortality?
Well, generally speaking, and this has been true historically, communities that have the highest infant mortality rates are communities that are usually steeped in poverty and steeped in issues that we now refer to as social determinants of health. Those issues of housing, of jobs, of employment, and as Ken alluded to earlier, issues sometimes of racism and issues of stress that are associated with poverty. And those issues cumulatively mm-hmm. affect a mother's health as well. So all of those issues impact her pregnancy, impact a mother's health, impact the family's access to health care and to decent, affordable housing, a number of things that impact birth outcomes for families.
Mm-hmm. And why is there such a racial gap?
Well, because of many of the reasons that I just mentioned,
yeah.
I think that people of color are disproportionately mm-hmm. poor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that contributes to the infant mortality rate gap as well.
Low birth weight babies.
I'm pleased to say.
I apologize. Keep going.
No, I was going to say that the highest infant mortality rates in this country are to African Americans, and then second highest are to tribal nations.
Mm-hmm. What about low birth weight babies? Why is that a problem to have a low birth weight baby? What is that? How does that affect the continuing development of that child?
Well, the low birth weight babies, and I can leave some of this to Dr. Art James, because he is a clinician to whom you'll be speaking later. But low babies have to struggle to survive.
Mm-hmm.
They're not as fully developed. They have more health issues. They're more prone to infections. So...
Deborah? Did we lose Deborah?
Hello?
Arthur, I apologize for that. Looks like we had another... We're not doing great with the phones today, folks, but we are doing great talking about infant mortality. Efforts to stop it in 20 years in New Haven, tackling the problem with Ken Harris, the head of... New Haven Healthy Start. And I'm sorry, my station manager heard you. Deborah's still on the air. Deborah, did we lose you? Are you there?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Just because Arthur was calling on the line and we're talking to Deborah Frazier. Deborah, before we go to Arthur, I wanted to ask you about the current mood in Washington. What is the state of the federal and state assistance you get to run these programs? And what is the prognosis going forward, given tight budgets?
I don't want to speak for the prognosis of Washington, but we are hopeful. And I tell you why, because babies, healthy babies, is a nonpartisan issue.
Mm-hmm.
The Healthy Start program started in 1991. It was a President Bush initiative that was led by the Secretary of Health, Louis Sullivan. And at that time, President Bush, in his campaign, made a pledge to support children and children's issues. And he came into office at a time when this country had a very high infant mortality rate. And he commissioned, there was, in fact, a White House study on infant mortality. And it was so embarrassing. That the findings for that White House study led him to create the Healthy Start Initiative. And the contributing factors at that time, in 1990-91, told the Bush administration and Louis Sullivan that infants in this country were dying from preventable causes.
Mm-hmm.
And if they could address those causes at the root community level, then America had a fighting chance to reduce the number of infant deaths.
What is the...
Why Healthy Start is a community-based program. It is because of the findings and the recommendations from that White House study and from the Bush administration in 1991.
Is that argument still holding water with the current crop of Republicans in the Trump administration? I remember that President George Bush, W. Bush, was a big supporter of community health programs and community health centers. He did the most funding for those health centers of any president in history until Obama. What is it looking like now? Has that changed? Is there still that bipartisan consensus? Are you still getting the same reaction from lawmakers that you were getting then?
I do. When I go on the Hill and talk to congressional members on both sides of the aisle, and I tell them about what Healthy Start is doing, we get support on this issue. So we're hopeful that we continue to get that support.
Yeah, well, good.
Because this is an issue, I think, that everyone can agree on, that we want babies born healthy and well. And to have children born prematurely, a low birth weight, is expensive, and it does not serve a community well.
All right. Well, thanks so much, and good luck keeping it positive. And looking forward
Thank
to seeing you.
You
in New Haven on Thursday. Thank you for taking time. Thank you for being so patient, Ms. Frazier. And we did have those technical difficulties because it was
no
worth
problem.
Hearing it in the end. So thank you, Deborah Frazier, for joining us on Dateline New Haven and WNHH Radio, your home for community radio at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. We're talking about infant mortality and New Haven's 20-year campaign now under New Haven Healthy Start to keep the rates as low as possible. Ken Harris is in the house. He runs New Haven Healthy Start. He's been at this business as long as it's been going in America, and he's the head of the National Board of Healthy Start Association, as well as running New Haven's Healthy Start. And we're hoping to go two for two finally here on our phone situation. We have Dr. Arthur James. Are you on the phone, sir?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Hey, Art, how you doing?
We have Houston. We've made contact. Dr. Arthur James is the executive director of the Kerwin Institute for the Study of Race and Ethnicity. He's an associate clinical professor for the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Ohio State University's Wexner Medical Center. And Dr. James is a keynote speaker this Thursday in New Haven at the Omni Hotel at the day-long convening, Then, Now, and Beyond, on infant mortality. Dr. James, how you doing this morning, sir?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
It's good, and it's great to hear your voice. What's the message you're bringing to New Haven this week?
Now, you're kind of breaking up, so I hope you can hear me okay.
We hear you great. We hear you great.
My audio isn't that great.
Sorry about that, but we do hear you great. What is the message you're bringing to New Haven?
Well, I think a couple of things. I'd like to review the black-white racial disparity in infant mortality and make sure that people understand that the gap in the opportunity to survive the first year of life between blacks and whites is not natural, that it's man-made, that we've created conditions for some of us in our society that are associated with significantly higher risk for optimal achievement of the outcomes that we want to achieve. And so that's going to be part of my message. One of the good things about understanding that a significant portion of the challenge is man-made means that since we created it, if we have the will, we can fix it. I also want to drive home the message then that our goal should be not just to decrease the disparity in infant mortality, but to entirely and totally eliminate it. All babies deserve the opportunity to survive the first year of life, and we need to create conditions that are associated with us going full court press to make sure that we provide those opportunities.
Dr. James, what are the key statistics that stand out to you that demonstrate the breadth of this challenge?
Well, so if I just use Connecticut data to drive home this point, And the data set that I will be using actually starts in 1992 and goes through 2014. That data suggests that in 1992, black babies in Connecticut were dying at 2.84 times the rate of white babies. That disparity is down to 2.3 in 2014. But that any babies die at rate of another group's babies is not natural, and it's something that we need to correct. To Connecticut's credit, since 2005, the rate of improvement in black infant mortality has actually exceeded the rate of improvement of white infant mortality as a state, and that gets to be something that is important. Only because for the survival rate of black babies to catch up to where the survival rate of white babies are now, we need to continue to improve the rate of survival for both groups, but to catch up, the black infant mortality rate needs to improve at a faster pace than the white infant mortality rate.
Dr. Arthur James, let's pretend you were an all-powerful sultan or a genie. And you could make tomorrow three things happen in our community that would eradicate or work toward eradicating that gap. What would those be? What would you make happen?
Yeah, I don't know that I could summarize it.
Would it be like have everybody stop smoking housing?
I'll try to give you general categories. First off, on the community level, We need to create conditions where every baby that we bring into the world is a wanted pregnancy, so that we need to decrease the incidence of unintended and unwanted pregnancies. And before getting pregnant, of course, want to optimize our health so that clinically we improve our chances of being successful.
So is that reproductive choice, birth control, public education, community outreach workers who talk with people in their community, peer pressure, parental? What are some of the great ways to get at that?
Yeah, I think it's all of that, actually. For anybody who is sexually involved, if they as a consequence of that involvement, don't intend to be pregnant, then yes, family planning is extremely important. So people need to be on a reliable form of birth control. But even before that, you know, we need to optimize our health so that if, particularly for women in reproductive age range, need to be seeing the doctor regularly and being certain that, you know, they're entering pregnancy or the possibility of pregnancy in optimal health. So, you know, weight control, an effective form of birth control, no drugs or alcohol. If we do have medical conditions, to make sure that those medical conditions are optimally controlled prior to pregnancy. And sometimes that means, in terms of clinical visits, that we have to switch to medications to control those medical conditions where the medications themselves are associated with less risk to the pregnancy. But that's stuff that we do on an individual level, on a community level. Beyond that, there are some systems issues that need to be addressed. Most of us of color live in communities that have been historically marginalized and therefore subjected to decreased investment by banks and businesses, poorer schools, significantly higher challenges in terms of neighborhood-related issues, a higher level of poverty and unemployment, et cetera. Many of those things are beyond the control of individuals and have to do with the policies, practices, and systems that we've been subjected to over a long period of time. And on a community level, those things also have to be fixed because the conditions in which we live in have a substantial impact not only on our health but on all of those other parameters that I've mentioned. So that I make that point only to make it clear that what then we're trying to improve is not just the medical or clinical stuff, but it's also that non-clinical stuff that has clinical consequences.
Right, systemic. So, Dr. James, what would be a good specific example or a couple of specific examples of the way that these systemic barriers put black parents at a disadvantage? What kind of stuff happens at the hospital? What kind of stuff happens? Dr. Deborah Frazier talked about housing disparities, access to health care. What kind of specific barriers do you see in so many communities?
Yeah, I think an example that most succinctly clarifies some of what we're talking about is in the area of housing. So if we recall that in the 1930s, the federal government developed what's called the Homeowners Loan Corporation, and it was that corporation that
the granddaddy of redlining, when they decided that a whole bunch of neighborhoods, because they had black people or Jewish people in them, were not desirable and did not offer. They used that rating was what mortgage providers used in deciding who got a loan and who didn't.
That's correct. And so that process, along with other things that occurred subsequent to that, that reinforced the segregation that was bolstered, if you will, by the whole redlining effort, resulted in a lot of our neighborhoods then being the way that they are. And, you know, we're coming to New Haven to celebrate the 20th anniversary of their Healthy Start Project. There are currently 100 Healthy Start Projects throughout the entire United States. And recall that to become a Healthy Start site, your infant mortality rate one of the requirements is that your infant mortality rate has to be at least 1.5 times the national average.
7.5%.
If you take all 100 Healthy Start sites in the United States right now, 70% of them are located in areas that were previously redlined. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a mistake. I think that the redlining, again, contributed to the conditions in those neighborhoods that unfortunately are placing our babies at increased risk for the opportunity to survive the first year of life.
Now, first, so we need to get running. It was so interesting talking to you. It's going to be great hearing you in New Haven on Thursday. One last thought I had on redlining is it feels like there's a double whammy now with predatory lending, because you had the HOLC and a whole practice of redlining that exists to this day with conventional loans that other people can get where it could be cheaper to own your house than to rent a house is not made available to minority communities the same way. There's not the asset wealth that's shared to their kids. But you also have Wells Fargo, for instance, admitting this past week that it went out of its way to find black borrowers who could not afford certain loans and charge them higher rates so that they get the fees up front and then take the houses back. And we've seen that kind of predatory lending on a larger scale. So on the one hand, you have it hard to get a mortgage and get a decent home for the same amount of money as it would otherwise cost to rent. But on the other hand, when you do borrow, and the studies have shown this is a middle class African Americans who earn the same amount of money as white home loan recipients who have the same incomes who don't have these same predatory loans, they end up losing their houses more. I don't know if you've seen any of that in your research.
No, I think you're absolutely correct. And if you look at the data on a larger scale, this isn't a part of my talk, but something that we follow pretty closely here at the Kerwin Institute, if you look at the data on a larger scale, what it would suggest to us is, in fact, that this predatory lending preferentially took place in, again, those same neighborhoods that were redlined. And so as a consequence, the double whammy analogy that you use is very appropriate, because not only were we then in marginalized communities, but when we had this opportunity to get mortgage loans and move out or improve where we were, because of the predatory nature of those loans, we are at risk for or have lost our homes. And so it drives us back into, again, those marginalized communities associated with the troubling characteristics we've already outlined.
Well, thank you so much, Arthur James, for giving us a taste of what you're going to be talking about in New Haven, the research you've done on racial disparities in healthcare. You're the executive director of the Kerwin Institute for the Study of Race and Ethnicity. You're going to be speaking this Thursday in New Haven at the New Haven Healthy Start 20th Anniversary. Thank you so much, sir, for calling into Dateline New Haven.
And thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Hey, safe travel. I'm glad you're coming before the hurricane. Hurricane Irma, that is. Okay, thank you, sir. So we have just a couple minutes left with Ken Harris here from New Haven Healthy Start. This Thursday's the event. So you coordinate cares for 13,000 pregnant women. Is that a year or is that to date?
To date.
Well, okay.
To date, yeah, we serve almost 2,000 women a year
through all right.
prenatal care, and then more through outreach, and then we have about 1,000 babies.
And you have a comprehensive risk assessment for 100% of those who enroll,
mm-hmm.
and you have all these partners that work with you.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I kept hearing, I heard how black infant mortality is the highest, then Native Americans. What about brown? Is there a problem in the Latino community, or is that not as high, and why would that be?
Not as high. Their rates are similar to white babies, so it's not as high.
That's so interesting. Yeah. Why is that?
I think maybe the access they have and getting into care early and taking advantage of some of the services, perhaps.
Because you got a bigger barrier with language there.
Mm-hmm. But I think the way some, again, I think access, many of them get connected to care and care early, so the kids are covered. So I think those, are, we haven't explored it deeply, but that's some of the things we've looked at.
So W.E.B. Bois, more than 100 years ago, said that the color line was going to be the big question, the Negro question, as they mm-hmm. called it then, for America. It sounds like that question is still with us.
Definitely is with us.
117 years later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'm so glad that you're on the front lines, Ken Harris, mm-hmm. New Haven Healthy Start. And I learned today, board chair of the National Healthy Start mm-hmm. Association, you're fighting for our society to help kids get born
mm-hmm.
healthy and be born alive and healthy and have a chance, an equal chance to everybody else in life.
Absolutely.
That's God's work, my friend.
Absolutely.
Keep it going. And I'm just going to remind you one last time, Omni Hotel this Thursday, 8:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Is it free?
It is free. Absolutely.
If you want to head out there and hear more about what you heard on the show, I want to thank you for listening today to WNHH Radio, Dateline New Haven. Thanks to Yale New Haven Hospital
and
for providing financial support.
And I was just going to say, if they want to register for the event, they can certainly go to our website at the Community Foundation or the National Healthy Start website as well, which is www.nhhealthystart.org.
NHHealthyStart.org.
Yep.
All right. See you then. Be there or be square.
You got it.
All right. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. Now we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book your flight with us all day and all night long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.